from an undisclosable location for reasons of security and therefore insecurity. Come at the hour, come at the mothership, that is, Coast to Coast AM. Good evening to you. It's a pleasure to be with you. I always say this, it seems like an eternity since I was, since we were together last time, and yet the week goes by. Have you ever seen a year go by so fast in your life? Well, Glynis McCann said, the numbers lady said, get it done this year because it's going to go quick. Well, we have a show lined up for you tonight. It's not actually a show, it's a program, because you can't see it. No webcams allowed. That would be, well, inappropriate at best and appalling at better. The surprise, Monsanto-funded research finds their product safe. That's according to InfoWars. And the UK police are drawing on old Uncle Addy. Uncle Addy Hitler, Adolf Hitler, and his thought police. Monsanto-funded research finds that their genetically modified organisms are perfectly safe. California's down $16 billion. Let's see, what else? The NSA and the Google spy ties can remain secret, according to the courts. You know what this means, of course. Yes, you know, we do warm and fluffy. We do fuzzy sometimes. We do garden gnomes and fairies. I was a part of that myself on St. Patty's Day. A day for drinking your whiskey and drinking your beer, green or otherwise. But mostly these days it's conspiracy, takeover, and betrayal. Did I mention conspiracy? Oh, yes. And Armageddon. Dalai Lama warned of Chinese plot to kill him. Chinese dissident's nephew arrested. It's just endless. And here's something interesting. The Facebook co-founder, Eduardo Saverin, the billionaire co-founder of Facebook, renounced his U.S. citizenship before an initial public offering that values the social network at as much as $96 billion. Do you think this move was contrived to reduce his tax bill? Tonight on the program, this is really one of those, well, the wild angels ride tonight. We will have on the bridge of the mothership for you, with their singular speeches for your consideration, Stephen Quayle, the author of several books, been on the front lines of major news stories. His research of war and space, ancient history and technology, such as ancient Vimana flying machines, is unmatched. He's been doing it for 30 years. And we'll be joined concurrently by Stan Deo, who has held above top secret security clearance, worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. He's lectured on many world events, the coming global economic collapse, and it is coming, developing solar-related crises in the Earth's climates, the UFO deception and its real intent, suppression of badly needed technologies, and high-voltage physics of cheaper energy. One night, probably in 1880, John Swinton, then the preeminent New York journalist, was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, someone who neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying, "There's no such thing as an independent press. At this date of the world's history in America, there's no such thing as an independent press. You know it and I know it. There is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. I am paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper I'm connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it, and what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. John Swinton, 1880. Mr. Swinton, if you're listening out there on the electromagnetic field, let me just say this. The hell we are. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. Caravan to Midnight leaves in 2 minutes. Right here. Stick around. SNS. Come up on the bridge. And I won't say which of the S's was Stan and which one was Steve, so that way you both get to come up on the bridge at the same time, all right?
Aye, aye, Captain.
Arg.
Hey.
Well.
Hey, John, I'm here with you, and, glad to be on with the Coast family, and it's amazing that you opened with that quote, because the quote is pretty much in 1880, Swinton was, I believe, even up for a Pulitzer Prize or something, some major prize beyond the New York Press Club. And to this day, nothing's changed because, we talk about all these things that are going on. And it's kind of, I would say, almost the quintessential statement of ignorance for people to say, well, I don't believe it unless I see it in the mainstream press. David Rockefeller said this is important because everything that Stan has done, and I'm going to turn immediately over to Stan after this, and we'll talk about, we're going to cover everything tonight. And I think that Stan and I have pretty much come to the same conclusion. I'll let him speak his heart and mind, of course, but we're both of the impression that tonight is a seminal turning point in the dissemination, if you will, of the information that is so obvious now. 10, 15 years ago, it was in the future. Now it's here and breaking. But let's see what David Rockefeller had to say, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission. He said, we're grateful to the Washington Post, New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promise of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plans for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. Now, that's a pretty profound statement, because in essence, the press is controlled by the very people that are the puppet masters behind the scenes. Edward Bernays said this, it remains a fact that in almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who pull the wires which control the public mind, who harness old social forces and contrive new ways to bind and guide the world. Now, that's a pretty profound statement. So with these statements that we're opening up tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to cover, by the grace of God, we're going to cover everything. And, I asked Stan before we went on the show earlier today to share, if he would, with the Coast family, because we're seeing so much earthquake activity. We're hearing the strange noises around the world. And nothing seems to have gotten attention of the people of the world more than the unnerving, strange sounds. Oh, sure, they're explained away this way and that way. But the feeling that things are not the same anymore, and to quote the Wizard of Oz, we're not in Kansas anymore, is so predominant now, a theme throughout YouTube videos, on the internet, even the boards that that are controlled by the shills, and a shill is defined as a psychological operations undertaking to basically keep the people who would even go to those boards not only monitored but always in the question of doubt. So Stan, would you share as the opening part of the show, and we're just going to go back and forth, John, with as you would have us do, but just the whole situation with the earth changes, especially as it affects the New Madrid, pertaining to New Madrid, and the vision that you were given years ago of the splitting of America.
Well, I wasn't the only one, thank you, Steve, that had a vision like that. My vision was more of the splitting on the West Coast, where the Cascade Mountain Range is, and down into the Sierra Madres, down into Mexico. The vision I was shown in that particular part of it was that there would be 7 to 8 volcanoes erupting violently all along that that fracture line, if you wish, running down the west coast of the United States, and that this would presage the great breaking away of California and parts of Oregon, and huge earthquakes that would follow or attend that. The dream vision was, gosh, years ago now, probably 9 or 10 years ago, as I recall. But that dream vision was only part of what I saw, and the rest of it was what would come later, with like burning embers and stuff falling from the night sky over California. What those are, I'm not sure. They could be meteors. They could be ejecta from volcanoes, flaming things, because they weren't moving like meteors, not fast. They were with flaming tails. The New Madrid part of it, that I can see the Gulf of Mexico, either the Great Lakes emptying straight into that or the Gulf of Mexico emptying up into the Great Lakes. I'm not sure how it would go because of the curvature of the Earth, but the New Madrid fault line is something that is of great concern to the government. As you know, Steve and John, you've seen the FEMA activity and the earthquake drills that have been run in various states there in recent months. They don't do this. They don't buy meals and body bags and stuff just to spend our money, although an argument could be made that that's what they're doing, is trying to make us go broke. But I do think that we're being prepared as quietly, as calmly as possible for several threatening global events that will come from nature and really impact modern society all over the planet.
Well, you know, for years everybody thought these FEMA camps were just something made up, but apparently it's not. There's a video now up on Jones's InfoWars. It's not fantasy. It's basically, it's like you can become a FEMA camp internment resettlement specialist. There are exciting opportunities.
Well,
for you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, John, they could be setting them up. Our argument could be made that, well, we're setting these camps up so that when you're displaced from your home by hurricanes, landicanes, whatever, tornadoes, earthquakes, war, that we have a place for you to live so you're not just, you know, roaming the countryside. But there's not enough room for, you know, tens of millions of people in all those camps. Not to live there together at once at the same time. So I suspect that they'll be disposing of the non-essential personnel that arrive at those camps.
Stan, you've written a bunch of books here. The Cosmic Conspiracy is the latest one. Amazing stuff. Another one, Dare to Prepare, The Vindicator Scrolls.
Holly wrote that one. Yep.
Now, for those who are not familiar with you and your work, just tell us who you are. You've had an above top secret security clearance. You were undercover for the FBI and involved in all kinds of wonderful projects. So just tell us your bona fides.
Well, I suppose that the major thing is that I'm a research physicist, even though I don't have my degrees from university. I was appointed to attend the United States Air Force Academy, and I was there for about 20 months, and I left the academy defending a black cadet who was my friend, who was ceremonially discharged from the academy on an honor code violation he'd ever committed. But the real reason was the Air Force didn't want a Negro officer, and that's what it boils down to. And I gave up my career at the academy, and I was an honor code representative myself and a cadet in great standing with my fellow cadets. But I gave it up in protest, saying, if you don't bring him back, I'm going to resign. And 150 to 160 of my fellow cadets also resigned over it, which never made the press, you know, what we did and why. But anyway, after I left there, I went back to Dallas and studied at IBM in systems programming and operations of the IBM 1401 series at that time and later the 360. So I do write for computer programs. I have for many years, and design systems, you know, systems operations for companies. And when I was doing it in the beginning in Dallas, 1971, I was doing a contract job with some of my fellow programmers and systems analysts at a large corporation in Dallas, the Daltex Corporation, which was a conglomerate of about 100 corporations. Now, while I was there, I was approached by a friend of Dr. James R. Maxfield, a radiation research physicist and medical doctor as well, there in Dallas, who was an associate on a project with Dr. Edward Teller. Because of work that I was doing at home in my lab, I was kind of bored with real-world work. I set up a laboratory at home to research gravity, magnetism, and some rather exotic concepts to make flying saucers work. Because of this, somehow or another, they found out what I was doing in my laboratory at home, and it could have been due to a break-in that occurred there. My neighbors found people in the house during the day while I was at work, and this possibly was where they found out what I was doing. But anyway, I was approached at my office there by a corporation executive in Daltex who took me over to Dr. Maxfield, and that's where I got my introduction into the secret world of technology being held back from people, and where I was recruited to join their team. They knew somehow already that I was about to file a patent for what's called a plasma drive saucer craft, and it wasn't true anti-gravity at that point. It was just a ionized air type craft. So mainly my life changed at that point. They flew me and my family down to Australia quietly, letting no one know, and set me up with my control agent down there, Captain Sir John Williams, and that was in Melbourne. I came to find out later that he was a member in good standing of what's called the Round Table Organization out of London, which is part of the Illuminati, and it took me a while to figure that out. I knew who the Illuminati were from books and things, but did not know that the people I was working for were members of it in good standing. We parted ways, the Black Ops Project and I, after only about 18 months, because I protested holding back technologies that I thought could help the developing countries and the countries that were, like in Africa, there were countries that didn't have enough water and just even drink. And I wanted to have some of our free energy devices that they used on the craft that our group had, to help these people to pump water and to grow crops and, you know, teach them how to care for themselves and not just starve and have wars between each other over food and scraps of it at that. That didn't go down well. And so I argued over other things, too. And finally, it came to a point where it was suggested that I was going to be working at a lab all by myself at the bottom of a very, very deep mine in what's called Miner's Rest there, just outside of Melbourne, and that I could tell no one about it, and that I would be sealed in down there to finish my research on a new type of antenna to grab this free energy we were using. Basically, they were going to bury me in a mine shaft, and that was it. Then I wasn't too happy about that, and so I complained, and they cut me off, and I was met by the chauffeur at my home of Captain Sir John Williams, who told me, here's all the papers and contact we've had with you in this box. Do not contact us again. You're out of the program. Goodbye. And that was the sign that they were just about ready to be sure I disappeared. And I ran. I concocted what I think was a fairly clever plan to fool them into thinking I was somewhere where I was not, and changed my identity, my looks, and everything, and ran and joined some hippies and went across the Nullarbor Desert to the other side of the country and hid. So they did find me, but anyway, I had friends over there, and I made new friends over there in West Australia with the branch of ASIO, the Australian Security Intelligence Organization, and they were like you and Steve and I. They knew what was going on, and they weren't happy with the rest of the country, Australia, over there, and they decided to protect me, which they did, and saved my life at least on one occasion, and provided me a bodyguard with, you know, 45 under his armpit whenever I made public appearances there, which I did in great numbers, hundreds of lectures, to try to warn people not only of West Australia, but of the whole Australian continent and of the rest of the world that would listen about what we were doing, what we were suppressing in that group that I used to work for. So that's who I am. I'm a whistleblower in the area of physics, and not to be smug or anything else, but my IQ is way up there, and for this reason, I was able to educate myself in a lot of things before and after being in the organization, which allowed me to share these things with people and to develop new technologies to tell people about.
Well, you sound a little bit, just ever so slightly apologetic about leaving a university or a college, as it were, or academy, as it actually was. But I think we figured out by about the end of our sophomore year that university teaches attitudes. Academics are taught usually at the College of Engineering or the College of Mathematics, but some of the most brilliant thinkers that have ever walked this earth abandoned the the university and academy environment and just went forward. You know, I tell any young person who's young enough to be receptive to it, if you can read, you can teach yourself absolutely anything. And we're coming up on our hard break here, so thanks for telling us who you are, Stan. And Steve Quayle and Stan Day are just going to let it all hang out. I'm going to just keep the ship flying while they rocket back and forth. We will discuss Fukushima. Gee, all of these things happening. Let's see, the economy is collapsing. The FEMA camps are spreading. The Russians will be here soon. Mr. Quayle, Mr. Hideo have some information on that. And what are we talking about? Day and night, night and day, day and night. Something that to me is on a par with legal representation for your pets. Insignificance. Please stay with us. We're just getting rolling. Thank you very much. Be sure to go to the coasttocoastam.com website and check out the stuff on the site, including some images that Stan Deo has put up there. And we will continue our most singular discussion with Steve Quayle and Stan Deo when we return. Please stand by. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM. Okay, I'm going to just try and act as moderator here and let you two men go at it. But let me just ask something here and get things rolling a little bit. Why am I not hearing anything more from mainstream media about this Fukushima thing, which is a horrible accident, radiation's blown around all over the place? It's already been reported months ago there were 14,000 extra deaths of people 1 year and younger, mostly. And a lot of authorities out there who are not permitted anywhere near a television camera or a microphone are saying, oh, it's not good at all. It's bad. It threatens life on the whole bleeping planet as we know it. So,
hey, John, just moments ago, this is kind of interesting that you would go there. I have an email coming in from, let's see, I think it was 9:20. I want to share something with people. My calling since 40 years ago has been to be a watchman, and there are people that, you know, slam me, jam me, mock me, scoff me, you know, call me a liar. They call me everything that they can possibly call me. But one thing that's amazing is when I wrote the book Breathe No Evil, I was talking about obviously breathing no evil. I was talking about the weapons of mass destruction. I spent a fortune, I mean literally a fortune, in talking to, after the Cold War, talking to people that were formerly spies, that were basically now buddy buddies. I spent a lot of time, effort, and money trying to get a handle on the weapons of mass destruction and the absolute availability of technology that I would consider so astonishing. And when I went to the mainstream publishers, the reason I publish all my books, I got tired of being told I got to do this or that. I don't follow orders very well. But the point is, in Breathe No Evil, in 1995, when the Aum Shinrikyo cult released sarin nerve gas, I didn't know it would be in Tokyo. But from all of my investigations, I had a newsletter prior to going on talk radio in the early 90s, prior to that, 10 years almost. But one of the things that I said, within 2 weeks, there's going to be a major biological or chemical release in a major city of the world, and when that happens, everything will change forever, okay? Well, 2 weeks later, that happened, and that's when I was offered my first talk radio program out of Johnstown, Colorado. So now we're at a point where we're dealing with mass bioterror pandemics, and we're also dealing with something that no one is talking about except me that I know of, the mutagenic, meaning the genetic mutation of radiation and all of the chemtrail residue, all the chemtrail binders, meaning all the chemicals and biological components that are being sprayed on us night and day, and pretty much in the northern hemisphere, and then the release of Fukushima. By the way, Fukushima was no accident. You can argue you can blame whoever you want to blame, but it was no accident. Both Secretary of Defense Cohen and Zygmunt Brzezinski talked about weather warfare in my book, obviously, Genetic Armageddon, and specifically my book, Weather Wars, which, by the way, we have very few copies left of, and Stan and I are both convinced that the time is running, and as we get later in the show, we'll give you our individual thoughts on the timing in lieu of everything. But the fact that most people won't even, they'll slam or they they'll scam or they'll try and say that I'm a disinformation agent or Stan's still working for the feds or I'm working for the feds, blah, 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 blah. Stan and I both know what it means to have run for our lives, okay? Most of our critics don't know what it's like to be in that position. I don't know how deep I'm going to go into it or Stan wants to go into it, but I want to get to the whole thing of mass bioterror pandemics. What I basically have been trying to warn the people of, I'm the one that came up with the 100 lists of dead scientists. No one had ever dealt with that. I did it, but everybody rips it off with no attribution. And I don't care about this. What I care about is saving lives, okay? But I think it's funny because right now, as we're on the air together, John B. Wells, Stan Dale, myself, we're talking about events that have been planned for a long time. And it's basically the move to depopulate the planet. For people that don't understand what the, if you will, the prime directive of the New World Order, the Luciferians and Illuminati, they want the population to be decreased. Now, remember, God is basically told mankind to go forth and multiply to fill the earth. So it seems strange to me that he who creates it all gives a commandment to his creation is now being challenged by the fallen one, Lucifer, and his minions, and they want to destroy everything. And that's literally the last man. That's what transhumanism is. I find that it's interesting because when I was given the vision of the end times, I was not a Bible believer. I had seen Jesus face to face. He's the one that gave me the vision. And I didn't know anything about the Bible prophecy, end times prophecy, or nothing. Yet the word of the Lord to me, as I looked into his eyes and he looked into my eyes, he said, I'm going to show you the panorama of the future, but the events will only be brought forth into your current memory as they begin to unfold. And over the years, I've learned why he won't give me stuff to announce, like, you know, let's say years in advance. Although, contrary to my critics, I don't think anybody else was talking about chemtrails when I was. No one else was talking about clandestine nuclear weapons and the proliferation of the black market. Everybody, every time, John, I would go on coast to coast with Art first and then George later and now you. The CIA or the intelligence organizations would begin an immediate smear campaign saying that, you know, they're not in the hands of terrorists, blah, blah, blah. You know, this suitcase nuke thing is all crazy. And the biological terror threat is exaggerated. What we see now is we see Fukushima being intentionally, in essence, whatever caused it, whether it was HARP, whether it was a scalar weapon, and Stan can explain scalar weaponry in simple ways. God has given Stan Dale an amazing ability to help people like me who don't have his physics knowledge to understand complex stuff in a very, what I would say, wonderfully and understandable way. But what I'm telling you is there are actual videos showing, if you will, I think 7 discernible beams going into Fukushima to create a chain reaction. I'm talking above and beyond the earthquake. There are people that want to blame this country or that country for setting it off. And by the way, again, Defense Secretary Cohen, Zygmunt Brzezinski, National Security Advisor, said we have the ability to generate earthquakes and volcanoes. And both Stan and I are really concerned about the interaction of all this now coming to a focal point. So getting back, in no understanding that I can even begin to embrace, would you ever think that the most deadly genetic formula for a bioweapon would be released on the internet? Yet it is. When 15 years ago, when I first started this and talking about this, I knew that when they dug up the Spanish flu victims of 1918 and they started recombining it with Ebola and other deadly pathogens, that they were looking for what I would call the ultimate doomsday spray, okay? We can call that UDS, okay, because people can remember UDS. And now we find out that we're going to have a mass bioterror pandemic, possibly, by December 21st, 2012. And I think the thing that people have got to understand, the prime directive is to depopulate the planet. Somebody said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And one of the things I think people need to understand, the Club of Rome and their first global revolution, 1991. Now, look, I'm quoting the guys that rule the world and run the world, the guys that are the puppets behind the scenes. In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. But But in designating them as the enemy, we fall into the trap of mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by human intervention, and it's only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself. When I go out and say that the bastards, and my definition of a bastard, just so those who are easily offended, and believe me, John, if people would really look at open their eyes, that they'd use stronger language than me. The bastard is a word that God first applied to the fallen angels, the progeny, when the earth, that the sons of God, it's never talked about the sons of Seth. I'm just going to get that out of the way. But the word bastard was something that was never meant to be. These guys are talking about killing us, and they've done everything to spell it out. You can go on the internet and see hundreds, or if not tens of thousands of quotes, forgive me, on the population. These entities hate humanity. So guess what? It ought to make everyone furious that's listening to this broadcast tonight, literally, that there are devils out there that want to destroy everybody but them, and they want to take the world's population down to 500 million. So my passion in life, my calling in life, and this is why I put up with all the nonsense, I've turned down bribes that most people would absolutely be amazed at. I've turned down requests to join this and join that. And I'm telling you, you know, when you're talking $100, $150 million in a war chest, that's a lot of money, especially 10 years ago. But my calling, if you will, my prime directive, and so many times I said, you know, I've said, Lord, I cannot do this any longer. And he says, if you love me, feed my sheep. I said, Lord, I love you, but your sheep seem to have grown saber-toothed tiger molars or incisors, you know. The thing is that what we're talking about tonight is trying to give people information that they can act on and give them not only hope, and I think this is going to be the most hopeful show I've ever done, because there is hope. Because once you know what's going down, you can prepare for it. It used to be you had to get people to think it was going down or to show them how it was going to play out. And so for some of us that have been 20 years in the future, we're trying to get you to where we were at 15 years ago. And if you can't come to the place now where you see it's happening and say, oh, I've heard all this. For instance, when some, quote, famous guy goes on talk radio and calls Doug Hagman and I a liar, and he says we've got 20 years before an economic crisis, I would say this. He has just given himself his own proctological examination using his head, okay? He didn't even want to go and have a colonoscopy. He decided to do it, you know, with an eyewitness account to the inside of his intestines. That's as nice as I know how to be.
Dear me.
Yeah, you know, we are being in a position now. We are being placed in a position. We're being told. See, here's what everyone doesn't understand. And Stan can tell you this from being an insider. When you get recruited, and you get recruited into an area that most people don't even know exists, it shocks your system. And Stan, I'd like you to address that, because you saw things that most men won't even acknowledge. And you know, Jesus said it this way. He said, if I told you earthly things and you believe me not, how can I tell you heavenly things? But I'm telling you, the thing that is so astounding to me is that it's playing out. It's playing out almost as if the devil is telling everybody, here's what I'm going to do. What are you going to do about it? And everybody goes, nothing. Now, there are exceptions to that rule. But the point is that the mainstream media is a controlled vomit-emitting machine. There
Absolutely.
Is truth, just as you quoted. By the way, that Swinton, I guess it was, that's an 1880 document. So now we're at the point where a lie is true and a truth is a lie, and everyone believes a lie. And as somebody said, telling the truth in an age of universal deception is dangerous.
You know, Steve, John, how long we got before the break?
Oh, a couple of minutes. We got a while. Go ahead.
Okay. Back on that Fukushima thing, Holly and I were listening or watching a video today about that, and the thing is that I think it's reactor number three. Is it three or four, Holly? Is it number three? Yeah.
I think it's number four that's got the problem.
Yeah.
The latest problem.
And people have been asking us. Yeah, about the what to do about their water and stuff that's going to be irradiated and the food. And it's very difficult to remove some kinds of radiation from water. In fact, it's almost impossible to remove tritium, which is an isotope of hydrogen. This is going to be a big and growing problem. And it may well be, like Steve was saying, this is part of the pandemics that they're going to frighten the population of the world with, and also eliminate part of the population of the world with. Sadly, it's going to be in Japan's region and over toward us. It's coming in the air and on the water. You can remove radiation from particles by filtering them out and getting rid of the filters after you've done so many of them, so that it doesn't stay in your water filter. But Fukushima is just the beginning of a lot of problems with nuclear reactors. Whether the Fukushima event was the result of an earthquake, a tsunami, or other things like Steve was saying, doesn't really matter. If they can do it for those, if that can happen to those which were built, you know, using a GE design, we have some like that, a lot like that here in the United States as well. They could be damaged by earthquakes, terrorists, you know, various other things that could bring down a nuclear reactor. And I think it's a wake-up call to people to start preparing their own water and food storage, and how to prepare the water if they can't store water, how to clean it so that they can have water, because things are going to get really busy here.
You know, the thing that gets me about all this, Stan, I didn't mean to cut you off, but the thing that gets me about all of this is that, okay, first of all, somebody pointed out recently that it was a 6.8 that that hit Kobe, Japan, and it knocked a bunch of stuff down. This is a 9 that took out the Fukushima facility, but it didn't really knock over that much stuff. So, you know, somebody was on here, I can't even remember who it was, said it was Israel, oh, it was Lear. Said that John Lear said, no, this was it was Israel did it again. You know, every time something goes wrong in the world, it's Israel did it. You know, for such a tiny country, maybe the best idea is not to mess with it if they can cause this these huge problems. That's just me, though. But
look, I don't believe that. In fact, you know, I had a great deal of respect for William Lear, John Lear's dad, because he was in the early stages of researching anti-gravity, as I show in the book from the newspaper articles about him and his company, the Learjet company. But I don't hold the same respect for a lot of the things that, that John says.
Yeah, I understand. Some of it is kind of out there, but some of it is also tied to truth. But what I was getting at was that there's so much coming at us all at once. It's almost as though, well, all this alternative media, we weren't really planning on all of this, so let's try and figure out a way to lock down the net. Well, that's met with massive resistance. It's like, okay, all right, Google and the NSA can have their little relationship. If we know every keystroke, every text, every fax, every phone call, if somebody wants to retrieve a cell phone call that you made 3 months ago, it's there. This has been going on for years. So we got this H5N1 thing. We got the radiation thing going. Now we'll get into the Russian troops that are going to do that exercise up in Colorado here shortly. All of these things coming all at once, and yet the big media outlets say almost nothing about any of it. So it just seems to me that the message that's going out tonight to the Coast audience is people will tell you their bad intentions if you just let yourself hear it. When you hear that the surveillance upon you, Mr. and Mrs. America, you know, we're not talking about a head of a big corporation that could that has vast influence in the political arena or this arena or that arena, just average citizens. The surveillance on you is ramping up. Everything from cameras, your GP, your telephone tracks you. Everything you do and say is recorded. Tax. Want to get rid of the cash. Want to put you on a card. So, I mean, imagine if the cash disappears, if we did go to a cashless society and it was nothing but all on computer disk somewhere. How much easier would it be to rip off that money then than it is now with cold, hard cash? But now, do you know that you're even suspect if you buy your coffee every morning with cash? Turn in your bin Ladens, they say. They don't even want to call them Benjamins anymore. This is not paranoia. This is just information. We're going to have to take a break here. We're going to come back with Stan Deo and Steve Quayle. So just strap in tight. It'll be some sustained inverted flight tonight on Coast to Coast AM.